It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. New changes to student loans can make it more costly for people from lower or middle-income backgrounds to afford medical school.
President Trump's tax and spending bill signed into law this month includes a sweeping series of changes to the federal student loan system. Among them are eliminating Grad PLUS loans and imposing strict new caps on federal student loans.
The law will restrict borrowing for professional schools to $50,000 per year. Previously, students in medical school could use Grad PLUS loans to borrow up to the full cost of their program. About half of all medical students have taken out these Grad PLUS loans in recent years.
To look at the potential impact of these caps and financing medical school, we turn to Dr. John Raymond, president and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Raymond, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much, Kate.
One provision of the new tax cut and spending law eliminates the Grad PLUS loans, and it puts a cap on how much students can take out for professional loan programs like med school. And that cap is at $200,000 total. What importance do these types of loans have in helping students afford the cost of medical school?
Yeah, thank you so much. These loans are essential for many of our students. About 80% of our students receive some sort of financial aid, and most of those involve government-sponsored and government-subsidized loans. It's expensive to go to medical school, and without those loans, people that don't have significant means would struggle to be able to pay the tuition. So putting a cap of $200,000 is somewhat problematical because the average a lifetime debt burden for education of a student that graduates from a private medical school is about $250,000. And that's the average debt. And factor in that maybe 20% of the students have no debt. You can see that that $200,000 cap would require the students then to go to the private market to make up the difference in the federally supported loans. The Grad PLUS loan itself is actually the backbone of the loans that many of our professional and graduate students take out to really help them be able to afford their education. And the reason why these are desirable loans is that they do not require a co-signature and they have favorable terms, including repayment terms. This cap of $150,000 clearly is less than the total cost of going to medical school. And this will require students to take out private loans, under which there may be unfavorable terms. They may require a co-signature from someone else. And those will become barriers for students that perhaps come from underserved areas. They may be on the low end of the socioeconomic scale, or they're first-generation college students for their family. So this is going to be a significant challenge for many of those students.
Dr. Raymond, the cost of tuition alone at Medical College of Wisconsin is more than $65,000 a year. With these borrowing caps that you see, are you concerned about students being able to afford to become a doctor in Wisconsin?
I am concerned. So first of all, we'll fill our class with people that are willing to take out the loans. But what I'm most concerned about is that we will lose a segment of our population in terms of their willingness or ability to go to medical school. And again, people that come from families that don't have significant financial resources, that perhaps can't get a cosigner for private student loans, or our first generation college students. We may be shifting more toward a demographic of people that already have significant means and significant wealth that are able to afford to go to medical school.
If physicians in training continue to pursue higher paying subspecialties and they see these caps as well, what might be the effect on lower paying practices like family medicine and pediatrics? And since primary care, there's a shortage now of physicians.
Yeah, that's such an important question, Kate. And I think you're really onto something there. If students have significant lifetime debt, they're more likely to choose specialties that are more highly remunerative. And I'm also concerned that we're going to lose students who have an interest in pursuing research careers or even joining our faculty, they will be pursuing specialties that provide higher compensation. And this is totally understandable. You know, to take out significant student debt to become a physician requires a lot of delayed gratification and sacrifices by their families. If you think about it, you go to medical school for 4 years, you rack up this $250,000 debt, and then you go into a residency training program for 3 to 5 years where you're really not making a lot of money. Typically, these students would be coming out in their mid-30s with a lot of debt, with family obligations. And so it would be natural for them to pursue the fields that will pay them higher salaries more quickly.
We've been focusing here on physicians, but do these new caps affect students' ability to pursue jobs in other medical fields, like, say, becoming a certified anesthesiology assistant, or you mentioned, you know, academic pursuits, you know, MD, PhDs, perhaps?
Yes, exactly. The Grad PLUS loans are really there for professional and graduate student education. So for the fields that require a long period of time, doctoral fields or some of the healthcare professions that are not physician professions, this could put a real crimp on the types of people that are willing, again, to have this delayed gratification.
Republicans in Congress have claimed caps on student loan borrowing are to put, you know, the onus on colleges to rein in the rising cost of tuition. As you look inward at Medical College of Wisconsin, will you make changes? Will you lower the cost of tuition in response to these caps?
Well, obviously, that's a really important question. And let me just start by saying that at MCW, we already subsidize the tuition of our medical students by about 50%. So we collected $71 million of tuition revenue last year, which is a lot, but the total cost of our education program was about $142 million. So why is it so expensive? Well, first of all, we live in a technology-rich environment. Secondly, and that has to be refreshed every 3 years or so. Secondly, the student-teacher ratios really require a highly compensated faculty member to be spending a lot of time with small groups of students. So you can't pack a lecture hall with hundreds of students and get the economy that you might have there in terms of the teaching. It's typically done in small group sessions. So that's very expensive. And in many cases, including the Medical College of Wisconsin, we're taking highly compensated clinical faculty away from the clinic or highly compensated research faculty away from their laboratories. These are the folks that can really teach very well what the clinical correlates are and what the basic science is, but they're expensive. And there's an opportunity cost because then they're not in the clinic or they're not in their lab pursuing discoveries and new grants. So the model intrinsically is actually quite expensive.
We've also seen some schools like NYU and Cleveland Clinic going toward, you know, a full tuition scholarship for med school students, regardless of their ability to pay. Will we see more of this?
I think we will see more of it. And if we have a donor that has $2.5 billion that would like to give us, we could be able to do that for our students as well. You know, we're the third largest private medical school in the country at 270 students per class, and we have to subsidize the education of each and every one of those. So it really requires two things. One is a donor that has that kind of capacity, and the second is a relatively small class size. Cleveland Clinic has a very small medical school. And the NYU example, they actually had to shrink their medical school class to accommodate the endowment that was created by their donor base. So in some ways, although that lowers the barrier of entry for students because they're not accumulating debt, there also are fewer spots that the medical school is able to provide.
Dr. John Raymond is with us, president and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin, as we talk about paying for medical training and a closer look here at the physician shortage that Wisconsin is facing. You know, we're seeing this estimated to be physician shortage to be nearly 2,300 doctors by the end of the decade. Why is Wisconsin facing such a shortage of physicians?
Yeah, thank you. Really important question. So first of all, there is a national shortage, and Wisconsin is not immune to that. The medical field is a national and an international profession. We have, I think, adequate capacity in our medical schools to train the workforce of the future, the physician workforce of the future. The bottleneck isn't at the medical school level. In fact, medical schools have expanded their class sizes, and 30 or so schools have been created over the last couple of decades, so that we're actually training enough doctors. Where we run into problems is with the graduate medical education. Once a student graduates medical school, then they go on and do an internship and a residency so that they can specialize in family medicine or surgery, pediatrics, obstetrics, internal medicine, and so on. The government has a cap that has been in place since 1995 with the first Balanced Budget Act on these residency programs. So in order to train a resident above that cap, where you're not getting any more federal funds, health systems and medical schools then have to come up with the money to be able to pay for those, the education of those students. And if you think about it, when they go to residency, they're making a salary between $60,000 and $70,000 a year. You have to have malpractice insurance. You have to have a compliance infrastructure built around them. You have to have a teaching infrastructure. You have to have a patient safety infrastructure. All those things cost money. So the total cost of educating a resident after they graduate from medical school tends to be around $150,000 per year. Without help from the government, that cuts into the margins of a health system or requires a medical school to make more investments in education. And I want to make sure everybody understands there's big money in medicine, but the margins that health systems are having right now has been low. It's been in the 2% range. And the same goes for educational institutions. They're suffering from very low margins. So the ability to continue to add on to these subsidizations is rather limited.
Dr. Raymond, you're in an urban environment, but we've seen two hospitals and nearly 20 clinics closed in the Chippewa Valley region last year. Are efforts at bringing doctors to rural areas affected by these cuts at rural clinics and hospitals?
They are. It's kind of a complicated question, but we were part of the family medicine residency in Eau Claire, and really we didn't have a sponsor after HSHS left that market. So we are feeling that impact directly. And MCW does have two regional campuses in De Pere and Wausau that are really designed to meet those rural healthcare workforce needs. We specifically select students who come from rural areas and say that they want to eventually practice in a rural serving area. So your question is really very important because we not only have a shortage of physicians, we have a significant maldistribution here in Wisconsin. We have plenty of doctors in the Milwaukee area, plenty in Madison. But when you get up into the Northwoods or into central cities, urban areas, there's a significant underrepresentation of both primary care and specialty workforce. So this is going to be a challenge because if you think about what I was saying about the Grad PLUS loans, many students coming from rural areas are first-generation students. They may come from farming communities. They may not have a lot of family wealth to lean back on. And so when they're making a decision about whether to start this long journey of being a physician, expensive journey, they may actually choose not to do that.
I want to ask you about cuts in research. You said this spring that the Medical College of Wisconsin lost around $5 million in research grants after cuts to the National Institutes of Health. Is that currently the case? Can you give us an update?
Yeah, thank you. We've had 14 grants canceled. A few of them have been restored, but the impact over 3 years is somewhere between $6 and $8 million. That's something that we can accommodate within our budget. People have grants come and go. What's a bigger threat is the proposal to reduce the National Institutes of Health budget by 40%. That's about an $18 billion cut. The immediate impact on MCW could be as much as $50 to $60 million a year. And if you think about it, grants are given out in 3 to 5 year tranches. If you're cutting a budget by 40%, even if you didn't give any grants for a year, you would still have to do further cuts to the grants that were already awarded. So there are sunk costs in the research that was started, in some cases clinical trials, and there are sunk costs in the personnel that you've already hired up that you may have to let go if those grants are reduced. There's a chilling effect on the morale of early career scientists who also have a very long journey full of sacrifice to be able to have an independent research laboratory. And many of these are our best and brightest students. And if they feel demoralized, if they see their faculty having to let people go, or in fact, in the worst case scenario, having the faculty themselves lose jobs, many of them are going to choose not to go into research. And we could lose a whole generation of aspiring young scientists because of this uncertainty.
You've had a long career in medicine, in the medical community. Can you compare this moment to anything else?
Yes, I have been a National Institutes of Health funded scientist for the bulk of my career. I trained with a Nobel laureate and had a very robust laboratory. I also have been significantly involved in peer review for the National Institutes of Health for decades. The threat right now of a 40% cut is absolutely unprecedented. The National Institutes of Health is not the reason why we may be having problems with annual deficits in the federal budget. It's basically the budget there has grown at or a little bit above the rate of inflation, if you average that out since the 1960s. And to have such a precipitous cut, it truly is unprecedented. And we've gone through some ups and downs over the years, but nothing of this magnitude.
Dr. Raymond, thank you for this conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. Really appreciate what you're doing, Kate. Thank you.
Dr. John Raymond is the president and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin. We've been talking about federal changes to student loans and the impact on medical school students and how it could affect healthcare in our state. For disclosure, the Medical College of Wisconsin is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you work in the medical field, if you're a doctor or nurse yourself, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this news. Did you take out a Grad PLUS loan to help pay for your education? How much of a difference did it make? What do you think would be the impact of the government eliminating those loans?
Or did you or someone you know decide against medical school because of the cost? Let us know about your experiences and what you think is needed to graduate enough doctors in Wisconsin.
Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. You can also leave us a voicemail or a text. The number is 888-642-0232. That's 888-642-0232.